As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
I think they could have scored two more goals after the sixth goal, which was 87 minutes. Leicester were gone. Completely gone.
Son has his hat-trick!
Hello and welcome once again, everybody, to The View from the Lane, the Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. I'm Danny Kelly. I'm joined by Tottenham lifer James Moore and Spurs newbie Tim Spears, both of them back from a miserable midweek in Lisbon and a much better weekend in North London. Hello, Tim, once again. Welcome back.
Thanks, Danny. Great to be here.
And hello, James. Not just James, but rather tanned James. Welcome back.
Yeah, I honestly hadn't noticed that until we came on. It might just be like the tint on my...
No, it's the contrast to my pastiness you're noticing.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I actually had a very good week. The rubbish game and the rain at the start of the week didn't detract from my experience with Lisbon. It was amazing. So, thanks.
So, this is the happy James, yes?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Spurs winning 6-2 on the weekend didn't do any harm.
Well, this surely is the happiest you'll ever be. You're back from a week's holiday and Spurs have won 6-2. I mean, does it get any better in terms of James Moore mood?
Yeah, I mean, does life get any better than that? Probably not for me.
Well, we'll hear from later on in the podcast, I should trail this, we'll hear from somebody who is a Spurs fan and may even be happier than James. If you've been following Twitter, you'll know that a Spurs fan won £250,000 this week on a bet that relied on Tanguy Ndombele scoring a 92nd-minute goal. We'll hear from the newly enriched member of the public and Spurs fan a little later in the pod. The headline here, I guess, is Renaissance. I'm going to make a confession here before I start to get your views on this. I now do not understand what's happening at Spurs. At half-time, I was clutching the whatever this thing is at the side of my head. Oh, yeah, hair. I was clutching this and thinking, here we go again. This team is playing too deep, and if you let players as good as Tielemans and Maddison play on the edge of your box, sooner or later you will concede a goal. I was fuming. He doesn't make any changes at half-time. They come out, play a bit on the front foot, and they run out 6-2 winners. So here's the truth of it. Antonio Conte gets paid more than I do to know about football, and while they're winning 6-2, it would be churlish, stupid of me to complain because they're third in the table and whacking these things out. And yet, Tim, I wasn't certain that it was great again. Son was.
It wasn't for the most part. I felt like... as clinical as Spurs were to run at 6-2, it was sort of Leicester imploded, really. And Conte's sort of tactical switch on 70 minutes. It's weird to call it a game changer when you're already winning, but I did feel like that massively changed the game to put an extra man in midfield. You say kind of front foot and getting upfield, but I think two of those last three goals did come from Spurs winning the ball outside Leicester's penalty area. So, yeah, Leicester kind of just played into Spurs' hands, I think, a bit really. It felt like a bit of a desperate tactical last chance saloon move from Brendan Rodgers. He knew he wouldn't be able to sit back and get any kind of result. He knew that they'd concede from a set piece, which is just this bizarre thing that Leicester keep doing. So he sort of went for broke, and I thought that played into Spurs' hands, and they didn't have to play particularly well, certainly with the ball, to dominate the game. The possession stats say it was very much Leicester dominating, and that's how I saw it for long spells. But Spurs, you can't argue with how clinical they were. And six goals.
And the worst team in the league had 19 shots a goal away from home. It was incredible. What did you make of it, James?
I mean, like you, I was concerned for the first, certainly the first half, maybe the first hour, where, as we've said many times before on this podcast, that two in midfield is incredibly susceptible to being just completely overrun. And it does seem now like most teams have realised that the key to at least getting a foothold in the game against Spurs is to put another player in midfield and just like keep the ball in that part of the pitch as much as possible and try and avoid leaving yourself open to the counter-attack. And that was what most teams have done really this season. And we've talked quite a bit, Danny, about the possibility of sticking Bissouma or Skip into that midfield with Højbjerg and Bentancur and kind of making it slightly more rigid. And obviously the flip of that is you have to lose one of those attacking players. But... And yes, the obvious caveat, it was Leicester and their bottom of the league and it was the end of a game where they were already losing and it seems like the manager may be about to get sacked and whatever else. But in taking that backward step and putting a more defensive-minded player on, it did allow Spurs to kind of wrestle control back slightly more. And I'd be interested to see the possession stats for those last 20 minutes where it felt like Spurs were winning the ball back far quicker. There were far fewer like spells of prolonged possession from Leicester like there were in the first... Certainly in the first half, and again, maybe in the first hour of the game. It's always good to be proven right. And if this podcast is known for anything, it's particularly me, Jack and Charlie, making a point of highlighting the fact that we were right.
How
and,
right were you this know, time?
I mean, look, it was pretty right, wasn't I? And if Jack or Charlie were here, and unfortunately they're not, they would tell you that at about 4:30 on Saturday, I sent a WhatsApp to both of them saying Son will come off the bench and score. So there it is.
Well, I was going to say, why didn't you put that in the View from the Lane WhatsApp chat?
And so we could all have seen it,
and then which me and Danny are in, and then we could say, okay, yes, you were right, James, but we can't do that.
I don't feel like we've built up the trust yet.
I'm slightly suspicious of another WhatsApp group full of the Righteous Brothers. James, I play 3-5. When I'm playing Football Manager, I play 3-5-2. I believe, that's the way I've won magnificent trophies over the years. I'm not so certain you have to lose one of the forward players. I think Kulusevski could play in midfield.
Yeah, maybe.
In the same way that his work rate, Christian Eriksen was a creative player with a monstrous work rate. And I suspect he could do that as well.
Well, that's interesting, actually, because if you look at that 16-17 team, as it's laid out on like in the newspaper the day after the game, it is like sort of a front three with Son quite often on the bench and Eriksen kind of playing out on the right. But you know, in reality, that Eriksen would basically be playing in midfield and it would be Kane and Dele playing up front. So yeah, that and there were periods of that game on Saturday where Kane seemed to sort of be dropping into midfield and let Richarlison and Kulusevski kind of go beyond. So you can kind of see, that would work way better with Son in the team, obviously. I think the main thing is, and certainly none of us would pretend to know more about football than Antonio Conte, despite what we've said in previous podcasts. But it is encouraging to see him stray from that system to which he stuck to so rigidly for the last 10 months and it work. And that's not to say that suddenly he should play 3-5-2 in every single game, but it's good to have that in his back pocket, isn't it? To be able to switch to that. And aside from anything else, it's going to make it slightly more difficult to prepare for a game against Spurs. And don't forget, Leicester have had, 10 days probably to prepare for this game. So they would have had like some tactical master plan designed specifically to counter that system.
Did that include Spurs losing every header from every set piece? That is not part of
that's been their tactic for like 2 years, though.
Amazing,
right?
Isn't it? Tim, let's talk about Son, if we may, because last week we were trying to artificially inseminate you with Spurs, but now
I was sore for a few days, Danny.
But now you can see why it is what a lucky man you are to be the one reporting on this club, because one of the great players at the club having a terrible time, getting dropped to the bench. And coming on and scoring a hat-trick, including two unbelievably delicious goals that you'd be happy for them to be served to you in the finest restaurants in Europe. That, I'm afraid, sir, that is Spursy, not the other thing. Not giving away two goals in the last 5 minutes. That's just losing. That was very Spursy when they brought Son, and he was great, wasn't he?
I've seen three Spurs games now, and eight goals, and two very good wins, and two very good performances. I don't see what the problem is, really. I watched Kevin De Bruyne score a 24-minute hat-trick for Man City against Wolves in May and just assumed that that would be the fastest hat-trick I'd ever seen in my life.
Oh, you fool.
it was incredible. The first goal, it just made me laugh, really, because he was sort of running towards the box on his own. He had no one for company. And I just felt like he just thought, sod it, I'm just going to shoot. And the celebration sort of reflected that as well. He was sort of like, well, you know, what was the big deal? That's how easy it is to score a worldie.
I don't like to see him not smiling, though, because his smile is part of what I think Spurs are these days. But you're right, he took it very seriously. I've scored a great goal now. You can see I can all do it. The second one, I mean, I presume you've all seen the little piece of film on YouTube. Absolutely, and not just roughly the same as, absolutely identical to a goal he got at Spurs at the same end against Leicester last season.
I mean, the most impressive thing about that is the first one's on his right foot, the second one's on his left foot, from more or less exactly the same part of the pitch. And like, he can bang one into the opposite corner either side with his right or left foot from that sort of position. It does make you wonder how a player who can do that could go like 6-7 games without scoring a goal.
Well, it absolutely does. And I'm so pleased for him because I think he's important to the team, but he just appears. Now, look, I don't know, if I might quote my youngest sister, if he keeps kidnapped people underneath his staircase and feeds them on coal, which is what she suspects Paul McCartney does. But he seems like such a decent, straightforward fella as well. You just want him to do well. And it was absolutely great. Really, really pleased with that.
Well, he said after the game he was frustrated with his lack of goals, but not worried. It's not something that's been concerning him, which is the ideal combination, really, for a player of his talents. You want them to be frustrated. It wasn't a lack of confidence. I noticed after the game he had a very long embrace, 30 seconds or more, I'd say, with the fitness coach, Gianpiero Ventroni. And Son was asked about that after the game, and he said he'd had a very nice conversation with him before the match, which sort of made him feel very comfortable and very grateful. And I guess that sort of reflects the love for him. I mean, you know, the ovation when he came on the pitch, you know, the guy hasn't scored in 8 games, was for a returning hero. And it's also really interesting to note to me how whichever forward starts on the bench is coming on and making an impact and feels like they've sort of got a bit of a point to prove. So Richarlison at the start of the season, then Kulusevski for a couple of games. I thought he sort of earned his place with a good performance against Sporting in midweek, and now Son comes off the bench and scores a hat-trick. So it's a fantastic dilemma for Conte to have, but whoever's the one that's been left out is coming on and making an impact, and that's a good sign.
Yeah, I noticed he said, he virtually said, isn't he, that with the fixtures coming up after the international break, Harry Kane will be rested for some games. Can I use the phrase "good luck with that" to the Spurs manager? Not just the reaction in the crowd, but also, again, he's on the big money. He must know how much influence Kane has in the team, psychologically, physically, all the rest of it. We'll see about that. Can I have a quick aside, gentlemen? You've watched a lot of football over the years. About Leicester City, they have now made a start worse than Derby did, you know, clearly previously, in 07-08, the shittest team ever to disgrace the Premier League. And Leicester have now made a worse start than them. I should make the point that a few years ago I was on BT doing the transfer deadline day in January, and I started to bang on about that blinking awful Derby team and how I thought they should have been thrown out of the entire league for the way they performed in the Premier League. I said, and then in January, they brought in another load of absolutely pony players.
The players they signed in January are unbelievable. It's like Robbie Savage
was next to me and said, I was one of those. Ah, not you, Robbie. No, mate. No. Obviously, you made a huge difference. I mean, for a man of my size, my feet are not huge. They're only size 10. But I do seem to be able to plant them in some very good places when I get going. Leicester, terrible. And it reflects, I think, that Danny Ward, who I've got no feelings either way about Danny in the goal, but I'm asking you, Tim, as a seasoned football watcher, have you ever seen a goalkeeper with more jitters than he has at the moment?
Oh, blimey. Hans Sagers was pretty bad at Wolves for a couple of months, but no.
Wolves notwithstanding, we're talking about top teams now, come on.
He was pretty bad. I felt everyone's sort of been blindsided by his excellent performances at the Euros last summer and thought that he can then be a Premier League goalkeeper. It's weird, Leicester. They've not only got such a good 11, they've got such a good bench. That game seemed to be made for Jamie Vardy for me, the amount of spaces Spurs were leaving him behind for long periods of the sort of first half. But he didn't come on until they were 4-2 yeah. down.
If we're bigging up our predictions, I think Charlie actually tweeted, I think, didn't he, before Son came on, that the game looked made for Son and or Vardy. It was so open. And yeah, I have to be honest, I didn't even realise, one, that he was on the bench, or two, that he had come on.
I had to double check this morning that he'd actually played. I don't remember him even touching the ball.
He played like the last 25 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just the way Spurs are at the moment and the way Leicester are, I got lots of points in the Spurs Predictor League I'm in because I predicted a 4-goal victory for Spurs. But I predicted 4-0. I was not expecting that it had to be 6-2, including a historic hat-trick. Not much more to say about the game, really, because I think Spurs' issues, not problems, because they haven't got problems, they're doing fantastically well. Spurs' issues will be more in a brighter relief, in more stern examinations will come, and we'll talk about it then. And we should be joyous. You don't get 6 goals very often in the Premier League. We should be punching the air, and so I am.
But basically, you went from what felt like it could be one of those really, really horrible moments, like one of the worst moments of the season at home to the team bottom of the league, struggling to get a result. And it ended up with what you might deem like a turning point come the end. So I think it's definitely a time to be incredibly positive because I think there's great cause for optimism after that. And look, I think there were some signs of improvement in terms of the way they played in the second half as well. Not just talking about scoring the goals. I mean, like, the tenacity they played with that they haven't shown too often in midfield, I don't think, in terms of the aggression of trying to win the ball back. And look, it is only Leicester.
No, it is, but it was a test. They're not the worst team in the league. We know that. And I think, you know, Danny said last week, the last thing you want to do is give them encouragement by giving them an early goal. And they were
And like you said, they would have had 10 days to prepare for that game. Like, they would have known from last Friday, I guess, the Friday before last, sorry, that their next game was going to be away at Tottenham. And they would have had that whole time to prepare for the game. And Spurs would have had Sporting, you know, flying back from Lisbon on Wednesday morning or Tuesday night, whenever it was. They would have only had like a recovery session on Wednesday. So they would have had like 1-2 training sessions to prepare for the game. So, you know, you are at a disadvantage when you're in Europe. And so to win a game late on like that, I mean, no, it speaks what Tim was saying about strength of the bench, I guess.
Tim, this is the first time for you covering Spurs from the wonderful new stadium. How was it for you?
It was a great experience, but it was surreal with the events sort of surrounding the match as well. Just the volume. Even walking to the stadium, I'm not sure if they pipe out music outside of the ground before the game, but walking into the stadium, it was very, very quiet. And then obviously in the stadium, the volume was turned down. There was some subdued music being played. But as the game went on, I mean, the noise for Son, I mentioned earlier when he'd come on, the noise for the last 3 goals at full time, even just who gets the loudest cheers for the lineup, I find quite interesting, which would be...
Who did on
so
this occasion?
So, Lloris got a big cheer, Kane obviously, Son as well, and Højbjerg got quite a rousing big cheer from a small number of people, I noticed.
That's his family.
May well have been.
It'll be the half of the fans that love him, not the half of the fans that hate him.
Veering towards really liking him, actually. I'm not really sure whether... It's from a small sample size, but he's been playing pretty well.
They didn't show this on Match of the Day. I don't know if they showed a replay of it on the game live on TV or on the screens in the press box or whatever. There's a ball that Højbjerg played towards the end of the game with the outside of his right foot right down the touchline. It was one of the most unbelievable passes I've ever seen. It looks like it was going to like skew off into the stand, and it like stayed just in play and went right down the line. It was amazing.
How many goals were Spurs ahead at that stage?
It would probably have been 5-2 or 6-2 at that point.
Yeah, all footballers. I'm not disputing what you say for 1 minute. Amazing how all footballers, when they're 3 up in a game, can suddenly do things. Well, hang on, we'd be 9 up if you'd done that earlier.
He did also play the pass of the season before last to Aurier at Old Trafford as well, as I've said a few times.
His pass for the 6th goal was very good too. And we should make a point here that VAR That would have been disallowed. There would have been no hat-trick. The linesman would have just said, of course he's offside there, because they can never quite judge really fast-running players against players toddling out. But VAR showed that he was onside. Was it Evans kept him onside? So hats off to him about that.
Just in terms of observations, like from the three games I've seen in the flesh so far, a few things have stuck out. One, Lloris is just outstanding. I had to look up his age again the other day, but 35. Some of the saves he makes.
If you'd been a regular listener to this podcast before you joined it, you'd have heard me saying that every week.
Yeah, come on, Tim.
No, of course. I remember exactly who said that and when, but you know, this is just my fresh observations.
Very good, isn't he?
Yeah, Bentancur's composure on the ball is extremely impressive, and the way he gets out of tight holes and some of the small passes he plays are excellent. And obviously, I've seen this before on telly, but watching it live, Kane's positioning is just mind blowing. The positions he picks up, the energy he shows, the vision he shows. Who instigated that change to him going deeper on the pitch? Was that Pochettino?
It's really Mourinho wanting to get more defenders and midfielders. Yeah.
Everyone deeper on the pitch. Yeah, exactly.
It was. And I don't know whether Kane knew he could do all that or he suddenly discovered it. But either way, he's worked out. He's two players.
There's like a YouTube video. It's a YouTube video of a game at Watford in like 2017. And it's like just a montage of all Kane's passes. And this was way before like he was known for being like the assist king. And it is just the same like range of like long crossfield passes, like raking passes, amazing balls. So I think he's obviously always had it in his locker. And I guess Mourinho, to his credit, realised exactly how that could be used. And Spurs obviously felt the benefit of that since. But you mentioned Lloris as well. And if we are going to praise Mourinho, which I know we don't like to do too often, Lloris was definitely on a downward trajectory before Mourinho came in and said, stop rushing my line all the time. Just stick to the goalkeeping and don't bother with this sweeping nonsense.
That's very fair.
And since then, like his general performance level, I think, has been much higher. Maybe one or two sort of clangers, but nothing. I mean, I think that Marcus Edwards one in midweek, I think he got a little bit lucky with it. I mean, very, very nearly embarrassed himself there.
But he got a good firm wrist to it, didn't he? So I suppose there's that. Meanwhile, of course, in our ever vigilant watch of ex-Spurs personnel. Note that he said, aforementioned Jose Mourinho, sent off at the weekend again as Roma lost at home to Atalanta. He got a red card in about the 50th minute for disagreeing with, let me think, oh yeah, everything that was going on. And the atmosphere in the ground once Spurs were winning, Tim, was it everything you expected?
Yeah, unfortunately, the press box is slightly the other side of the stadium, but the noise from that massive wall, which I believe, James, you sit in, is that right?
Yeah. That's where I am, yeah.
He's the leader of that wall.
It was pretty raucous. I mean, in a game you score six goals, you kind of expect those moments are like sort of tent poles, aren't they, in terms of atmosphere, so you kind of expect it to be quite high. But I did think it might be a little bit subdued, again, in the circumstances that the game has been played in, and also off the back of the game in midweek where things were pretty bad. I did think it might be a little bit more quiet, but I think a Saturday evening game is quite a good time for a game in terms of like people like having the date, you know, you can have like a drink and enjoy themselves. People can unwind a little bit more and then kind of throw themselves into it. Then you've got Saturday night afterwards. For me, I think like emotionally and alcoholically, it's the best time for a football match.
So how raucous were you and how raucous are you normally? Are you one of the ringleaders in that stand?
I'm definitely not a ringleader. I'm just believe it or not, I'm just a moaner. And in fact, I was moaning at 6-2 that they weren't going for a seventh goal. I think they could have scored two more goals after the sixth goal, which was 87 minutes. Leicester were gone, completely gone. They could have walked through and scored two more goals. I'm very confident of that.
And was this a thought you were verbalising?
Very much so. This is really bad. Like, during the game, I was getting really annoyed by how negative the bloke next to me was being. And at the end, and they're winning 6-2.
Yeah.
I'm like shouting, get the fucking ball forward and score a seventh goal. Never happy.
Try to moderate your own behaviour when you're watching your team, whether it's Wolves or Spurs. I've tried and moderate mine because I don't want to be. When I was a kid, I adored Martin Chivers. He was the right age. He scored lots of goals. For 2 years, he was the best player in Europe. And every time he missed the ball, there'd be an old bloke behind me who'd go, Jimmy Greaves wouldn't have missed that. And I thought, please God, don't let me be that person. And of course, over the years, the number of times I wanted to say Martin Chivers would have missed that, but I deliberately zip it because you can't be that person. It's not fair on the people around you. Now, James, Tim mentioned something about the volume of the music, but you noticed something else about the music in the stadium this weekend.
Well, so I noticed it, and I'm sure a lot of people have noticed it, been at the games. In the first three home games, they played Metallica like before the team came out, Enter Sandman, every game. And obviously it's like, you know, it pumps people up quite a lot. It's raucous, it's loud. And it kind of gets people into it. And they didn't do that before this game, which again, I assume it's possibly because of the circumstances of the minute silence before the game and whatever else, which makes sense. But the music they were playing was like sort of mid-2000s soft, like Keen and... there's like some Duran Duran they played at halftime. What's that 90s Duran Duran song?
Was it Ordinary World?
Ordinary World. Ordinary World.
Oh, God. Oh, so they're kind of going for
that halftime.
Soft balladry really out weird. Of respect or whatever it's supposed to be.
I don't know, but that's the kind of music. And I mean, obviously not just because some of those bands are from them, but that's the kind of music they used to play at games in around like 2004, 2005. The kind of stuff I can imagine hearing games in.
No, it wasn't though. They never played Radiohead Street Spirit at any football match I've ever been to in my life. That was before the game. They played Travis twice. They played the same. They've obviously run out of morose songs. They played I heard it when I was in the press.
They can get the Misery playlist on Spotify, can't they? Just back that out.
The philosopher Desiree was on at halftime as well, which is just bizarre. Never heard her at a game.
For many, many years, for decades, the man who did the announcing at the stadium was a bloke called Willie Morgan. And Willie also chose the tunes, and he was very good at it. The person, he's now retired. The person who does it now is called Pete Abbott. That's the voice, that's the stentorian voice you hear. Now, Pete is a friend of mine because we've worked on the same radio station.
Talks about, isn't
absolutely.
He?
Now, I think Pete should be allowed to choose the music because when you meet him, he is 60 years of age, but he looks 40 and something of a hobbit. When you meet Pete, you'd be amazed to learn that he is a massive music expert and still, ladies and gentlemen, at his age, I've got to stop myself from laughing, going to festivals and camping. Oh, yeah. So I think they should let Abbott have a go because he really has great taste in music. But obviously this is being done by some kind of either committee or computer program, AI program that says we slightly subdued music for people who are 35 years of age.
Well, I'd love to know where this Metallica thing came from. And I don't object to it at all. I think it's been pretty good, actually. But, like, it's clearly a conscious decision by someone that we need to play something that's, like, kind of, you know, like, aggressive and that's going to get people up for it. And you know, I'm not suggesting the home performances have been incredible, but they have won every game at home.
Are they still playing McNamara's band at halftime?
I don't know if they still play.
Because...
I don't know. Actually.
Obviously, a million years ago, Spurs just ran it to McNamara's band. It was Danny Blanchflower's choice. And then that went on all through the 70s and 80s. And then they had that poll, if you remember, saying, could we drop it? And people said, no, don't drop it. It's tradition. And so they come up with a thing of, well, we have to have, I think it was Irving Scholar, we have to have more modern music to run out to, but we'll play it at half time instead. And it was kind of, and it's been allowed to wither on the vine in recent years. I noticed that promise.
Well, they've played it as the team's coming back out for the second half, generally, haven't they? In the last sort of like two decades or so.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant. Are they still doing that? Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't. You know, I don't remember hearing it. I don't know. Maybe it's one of those things that it's like so habitual.
Yes,
you
exactly.
Kind of forget. And also, there'll be so, like Tim probably doesn't know McNamara's band.
No.
And I'm sure some of our like American listeners that haven't had the good fortune to go to a game or whatever yet. Might not know. So if you wanted to sing it now, Danny.
Well, the problem is, as I have a singing voice, like somebody cutting a zinc fence with a hacksaw. So, it starts, my name is McNamara, I'm the leader of the band, and it ends with, and a credit to old Ireland is McNamara's band. And it's a great tune. Already I can see Tim is dancing in his chair there. His mind has gone back to 15 years ago in a lycra suit in techno clubs in the Midlands. All right, so Enter Sandman it is for the time being. We'll look forward to the North London Derby on Thursday whenever we do the next one of these podcasts. Just to go back to the game against Leicester before we finish this half of the podcast, what percentage chance, James, would you say that Conte will change his you know, tried and tested system, having seen the success of doing something else, or and I'm, there's no wrong answer here, or will he, you know, Arsenal is coming, will he go back to what he knows best?
I suspect he'll go back to the 3-4-3. I don't see him straying from it immediately. I do wonder if it might happen eventually, but I certainly think for that game it will be depending on what happens with injuries over the international break, I guess, and whatever else. But yeah, I suspect it will be that. But who plays up front? Who knows?
It's the wing-backs is a bit of a confusing one for me. I thought Perisic did okay and is obviously pretty two-footed. On the, in fact, Charlie called it, didn't he, last Thursday, that might happen. But whether you get Sessegnon and Perisic again, whether you bring in Royale back, Kulusevski as a right wing back in a 3-5-2 has been mentioned in the past couple of days as well. But one thing that he can't do is play Sanchez probably in defence. Charlie said last Thursday that Sanchez was the most popular crap player in the current Spurs squad. And I did send him a message 90 seconds into the game saying, I understand now, after he'd given the ball away and then given a penalty away within space of about 30 seconds.
And don't forget that in between that, he'd been nutmegged as well. He gave the ball away, then got nutmegged, then gave away the penalty.
Can I just say, well, you praised Perisic there, and Perisic went to ground trying to win the ball in that 90 seconds twice as well. And like just completely like exposed himself. And he gave the ball away quite a few times. I wasn't actually that impressed with Perisic on Saturday, I've got to say.
I thought his set pieces were excellent, by the way. I know.
His delivery is incredible, but I was surprised. And I mean, I guess, you know, he's more used to playing on the left than the right, even though he is kind of broadly two-footed. He didn't look entirely comfortable, like, making runs off the ball, which is a thing I've been moaning about with Royale all season and last season. I wouldn't necessarily want Perisic to play on the right too often.
So would you rather that Royale was there?
Assuming Doherty's fit. I mean, he would be my choice out of the realistic options at the club at the moment.
Does that mean you think that Jed Spence is not a realistic option?
Well, no, I just think that Doherty was incredibly good in that role in those 2 months last season before he got injured. So it kind of feels like he should be first choice, really.
Yeah, and when he was doing that well, it was clear too that the other people in the team like him a lot. There was every time he contributed, that he was getting a lot of hugs and kisses.
And it was making Conte's system work, which you would have thought Conte would be banging into.
Listen, I'm going to end this section with it's not good news. I see clubs with whom he's associated as a manager wishing John Duncan all the best. He's in hospital and not very well. I'm going to be hopeful and say that I hope he recovers, but it reminded me, just for people of a certain age, you will be saying, Tim, who is John Duncan? Incredibly, if you think about all the great forwards...
Tim will remember John Duncan, as I do, as the manager
absolutely.
Of Chesterfield when he got to the FA Cup semi-finals. And knocking his own glasses off and celebrating.
Yeah, from the 97 FA Cup semis.
When they were robbed of a place, when Chesterfield managed of a place in the FA Cup final, they were a third-tier team playing against Middlesbrough. When the game was still level, they scored a goal, but because we didn't have goal line technology, it wasn't allowed. But just thinking about John just reminded me that back in the mid-70s, when Spurs were frankly useless and got relegated, the one bright thing until Glenn Hoddle came along about the team was John Duncan. And if you think about those people who've been leading goal scorer for Spurs over the years, Jermaine Defoe, Gary Lineker, Jurgen Klinsmann, obviously Harry Kane, Robbie Keane, well, some of those were not as leading goal scorer as often as John Duncan, who was the leading goal scorer 3 years out of the 4 years he was at Spurs. And this is bearing in mind that he was injured 50% of the time, perhaps because of the kind of lack of coordination that allows you to knock your glasses off. But we wish him well, because I have very fond memories of John doing his thing up front for Spurs with his great mop of black hair. But I hear he's not very well, and we hope he'll do better. When we come back, talking about managers, we'll talk about the current manager and the situation at Juventus, which is causing me to quiver slightly. More soon here on The View from the Lane with me, Danny Kelly, James Moore and Tim Spears.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh Football Club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Yeah, welcome back once again to The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. With me today is Tim Spears and James Moore. Before we get on to a very serious matter, I want to just, again, because I keep a very close eye on what all former Spurs players are doing around the world. Last week, I told you that Royal Antwerp had made an astonishing start to the Belgian Premier League, or whatever it's called, the Super League. I think they call it the Super Planet League, something like that. And they had won 7 out of 7, and their win the weekend before this was facilitated by goals from Toby Alderweireld and Vincent Janssen. Researchers have now since told me that that was Janssen's first goal, non-penalty goal, on European soil for about 6 years. Well, I have to tell you that Royal Antwerp won again this weekend. This time instead of 2-0, they won 2-1, and the goal scorers were Toby Alderweireld and Vincent Janssen. So they've now worked out how to win all games in Belgium by relying on goals from Toby and Vincent. Amazingly, the latter is more likely than the former is more likely than the latter. But Vincent's back in the Dutch squad. So something's happened in Mexico that we didn't all know about. Meanwhile, Juventus Football Club go from bad to worse. Hammered at home in the Champions League in the middle of the week. Yesterday lost to Monza. Monza making, that's the first victory they've ever had in Serie A. Angel Di Maria got himself sent off rather stupidly, and the club is now in proper crisis. It is thought that unless, except for the fact that Max Allegri, their manager, has got a massive contract they have to pay up, that he'd be out the door now. Now, obviously, Thomas Tuchel has added to the complications here because he would be the obvious choice to replace him. Or would he? Because at least two Italian journalists of my, not my acquaintance, but I read their stuff when it's translated to English, say that the person who really liked that job, and you know what I'm going to say next deflatingly, is Antonio Conte, hugely successful in the past at Juventus, and a former player, of course, as well. James, you've got your finger up, with all due respect to Tim, even though you're on holiday, I'm sure you are literally at the centre of a global web of football information and in the nose and spies. Should I be worried about Antonio Conte taking off for Turin?
I mean, what I would say about that is there's probably a difference between Conte being interested in a job and top brass at Juventus thinking they want Conte back, because I don't think some of the relationships there were entirely cordial at the point that he left. There would definitely be a few sort of rough edges to smooth over if that were the case. I mean, also, I mean, what you're mentioning about Allegri's contract as well. And again, I mean, I'm only reading this from probably the same journalist as you, but it seems like that is going to be quite a big hurdle and one that means wait a little bit longer before pulling the trigger. Although, obviously, you know, international break is traditionally deemed a good time to do it. So, yeah, I don't think we should be kind of spiralling into depression yet on that one again. Not least as we did it so many times last season that it just got incredibly boring.
You're giving him till the World Cup,
yeah,
are you?
Give him a few more weeks.
Allegri.
Yeah. Let's just stick with him. Show a bit of loyalty.
Yeah, of course. So he's got to build. He's got at least two more transfer windows. Tim, you'll find that this is a regular feature, not just of this podcast, but of being around Spurs these days. And I guess we talked about it a little bit last week when we're doing our predictions for what would have happened by the time Charlie Eccleshare gets back. I don't, the way you've started, I doubt we'll want him back, but you know what I mean. Until Conte signs this blinking contract extension, we're going to have to go through this agony, aren't we?
Yeah, potentially. Although, as James has alluded to, it's not as sort of cut and dried that him and Juventus would reunite. I spoke to James Horncastle about this for a bit of background, and he described it as a very sort of a complicated story and a complicated relationship. Obviously, he's their former captain, most successful coach of recent times, really. But they did have a falling out when they separated. Him and Agnelli had quite a disagreement. He was going into the last year of his contract, basically, and Juve put out a statement saying as such that he was going into the last year of his contract. He wanted the club to match his ambitions in the transfer market. That didn't quite happen. And then a week into pre-season, Conte resigned, which left a lot of frustration with Juventus in terms of sort of leaving them in the lurch near to the eve of the season. Some good managerial candidates had already gone. So they took it badly. But also, Conte had said towards the latter days of his reign there that being the coach of Juventus in the Champions League was like having 10 euros in your pocket when you're going to a 100 euro per head restaurant. So obviously that didn't go down well either. But he was moaning about his sort of transfer budget. But then the next season, Allegri takes over and takes him to the Champions League final. So there's no sort of love lost there. And when there was a behind closed doors game in COVID times, when Conte was manager of Inter, who of course Juventus's great rivals, so you know that's another sort of stain for him to go and manage them. There was a lot of abuse coming down from the director's box aimed towards Conte, apparently, and he responded by giving him the middle finger.
Yes, I remember this.
Yeah,
yes.
So it's fair to say that you know there's no love lost between them. James says the situation has improved in since then in terms of the relationship between them, but it's certainly not as straightforward as Conte wanting to return and Juventus wanting him back. And you know, everything I've heard Conte say since I've started covering the club is that he's very much feels like he's at the start of a project trying to build something. Certainly not sounding like he's, you know, angling for a move or that he's unhappy. I think he's starting to build something.
And I do think that Thomas Tuchel has complicated all calculations now, because there are teams out there who can see floating around free of charge somebody who's won the Champions League in very recent memory. And he is going to be a spectre haunting many of the top managers of these big European clubs. Speaking of James Horncastle, did anybody see him last night on Golazzo? He was wearing, quite rightly and respectfully, a black suit and a black tie. But let's be honest, with the way James's hair and beards work, if the caption said Blue Oyster Cult roadie mourns lost drummer, you'd have been unsurprised, wouldn't you? Let's be truthful about that. Well done, James. You've actually made me feel a bit better, you two, which is a rare occurrence. You've made me feel a bit better about the prospect of Conte staying at Spurs and not buggering off to Juventus, which I generally had a fear of last night. Though, of course, the list always goes now. The list which used to go when any club needs a manager, Zinedine Zidane, Maurizio Pochettino, Tuchel has now gone to the top of that list. So there's three of them floating about. So maybe all of that makes Conte seem a less attractive prospect. And I have to say, even though you'll hear me in the past on here, and no doubt in the future as well, doubting that he knows what he's doing at times, I still would rather have him than not just now. Because if you're getting north of 2 points per game in the Premier League, you're doing something right, despite old fools like me having a pop. We're going to end today with a lovely story connected with Spurs about a man called Chris Howell. His nephew Colin tweeted out after the rounds of Champions League games that his uncle Chris had won on a six-part accumulator no less than £250,000 of your English pounds. £250,000. Amazing. But he was reliant for that to happen on Napoli winning 3-0 at Ibrox Park when they were playing Rangers. And that goal, as you know, went in about 92nd minute from no less than Tanguy Ndombele. So a Spurs fan is saved by something good that Tanguy Ndombele has done. Not only saved, it wasn't a 5p bet, it won him £250,000. I'm delighted to say that that man, Chris Howell, is not publicity shy and is here now on the phone. Hello, Chris, how are you?
Hello, Danny, how are you doing?
Well, I can't be doing as well as you. I mean, it's a lovely day here and the hat is on the side of my head, but it cannot be as good as you're feeling. Tell us, first of all, congratulations, well done. Everyone loves to see the bookmakers getting taken down. What a thrill for you.
I'm still reeling for it. We both are, me and the wife, we just sit there looking at each other, giggling and going, what happened? Because we needed five goals in the last 6 minutes. And it all started going in with Haaland.
Yeah.
Then I think Neymar on 88. The others were a blur, but the last one from Ndombele, it's just amazing. We sat up till 2 a.m. going, wondering whether it was true. Is there a catch? Did I fill it out properly? Did I do this? And the wife just said, it's the longest VAR decision we've ever had.
And we've seen plenty of those in recent times, haven't we?
9 hours.
Obviously, you would go through all those things. That's the reaction everybody ever won the pools in the old days, just to make sure they checked their coupon properly. What was your immediate reaction, though? Were the two of you jumping around the living room?
We wasn't. We was just like staring at each other, hands on mouths, because we haven't had the best of years. It's like thinking there's got to be a catch. Got to be a catch. Did I fill it out properly? Did I do this? Did I do that? Got very little sleep. And so I think just after 9 o'clock that morning, bloke Scott from Sky rung us and gave us good news. And just cannot believe it.
Well, I will describe the fact that for those of you who can't, I can see you at the moment, not everyone can. You're wearing a lovely Spurs training top, and I totally approve. Well done. And we should return to the fact, though, that it is Tanguy Ndombele, of all people, who, as a £60 million transfer and earning £200,000 a week, let's be truthful, he hasn't done much for Spurs fans, but he may have just brought some credit back into his balance sheet with you.
Well, before, I don't know about you, he used to go around in circles. He'd get the ball, so talented, so much ability. But when he got loaned out, we thought, great, got Pesuma and all that coming in, and then, well, I love him.
You ought to try and get in touch with him just to tell him that he is the source of your great fortune.
I would meet him if I had the chance.
Oh, yeah.
If I had the chance, but yeah, and just thank him, because that's brilliant.
You're a man of a certain age, so you've seen Spurs win trophies and that. Is Spurs winning a trophy, was it a better feeling than winning £250,000 for yourself?
Wife wouldn't agree, she's a gooner.
Oh, well, you suffer under the same yoke that I do then.
There you go.
I mean, I know you've got to say birth for your children. That's the rules now. Those are the local bylaws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
After that, is it Spurs winning a trophy or you winning, I can't keep saying it, £250,000?
Well, I know, we keep saying it. Trophy.
Good man. Chris, it was a pleasure when I saw the tweet from your nephew. It's been even more of a pleasure talking to you, because one wants to see good stuff happen to good people, and anybody wearing a Spurs training top at 10 o'clock in the morning is, in my opinion, a good person. So congratulations again to you and the Gooner lady wife. I've got to be, you know, you've got to be even-handed. And, bless her. Bless her indeed. spend it wisely, my friend. Don't waste it all on sweets and ice cream.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Thank you.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other topics, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Yeah, that was Chris Howell talking to me on the phone a little earlier. What a brilliant story it is, and what a lovely chap he turns out to be. And sometimes the sun shines on the righteous, as proven by his Spurs training top first thing in the morning. Listen, thank you very much indeed for listening to us. Thank you to James and Tim for being with us. Thank you for James for coming back. Given your tan, you might have decided to stay in Portugal, and then we'd all be bereft. But thank you very much indeed. Remember, if you're not already an Athletic subscriber, you can sign up to read all of the brilliant Spurs coverage this season, as well as everything else on the site. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll be talking about Spurs players, how they might get on the World Cup, and much else besides. Thanks for listening again.
The Athletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.